The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, welcome everybody. It's hour number two here on Wednesday, the 14th of October. Beautiful day unfolding, warm day unfolding. We're going to knock on the door at 90 and might even walk through the door. So there we are. It's the middle of October in Texas, so get the shorts back out. All right, 866-660-5759. As he did yesterday, Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham is starting the Q&A with Amy Coney Barrett, and that means that next we'll go to some more moments with Dianne Feinstein, and then Democrat-Republican ping-pong, back and forth, and we'll cover a bunch of this action as we roll through the morning. Governor Abbott joins us at 8:35. Got a lot to talk about, of course, about the election, but also about the selective reopening of bars, the bequeathing of veto power to Daddy Clay in Dallas County. To Clay Jenkins and to other authoritarian Democrat county judges in Houston, in San Antonio, in Austin, where I think they have some bars. How bitterly ironic is it that the enormous lion's share of bar businesses that are dying on the vine, that are starving for business, I'm sure they were thrilled to see that teasing tweet from the governor that, what was it, little beer glass emojis? Oh, I'm going to open the bars. Yeah, great. But I'm going to give local, authoritarian, power-mad county judges the opportunity to veto me. Okay, we'll ask him about that. As well as about the one ballot drop-off per county, which a lot of people go, voter suppression! Well, wait a minute. Let's compare it to what we have historically had, and we'll let the governor explain that, and we'll talk about a bunch of other things when the gov joins us at 8:35. All right, you're joining us right now. Let's do a little phone action. People have been waiting during the news. What the first thing that that Senator Graham asked Judge Barrett about is the concept of severability. And this is really cool. One of the things about hearings, and this is kind of why I like hearings. I know a lot of people said, just go to the vote, spare her the grief. Well, she hasn't gotten a whole lot of grief. Think about it. Without the hearings, if we just gone to the vote, which it was a strong argument for doing that, we know how it's going to go. The hearing's just an opportunity for Democrats to make total jackasses of themselves, which I was kind of looking forward to. They didn't do it. They've engaged in an enormous amount of impertinence and constitutional illiteracy, but hey, that's entertaining too. But think of what we would have been denied. The masterclass in Constitution 101 delivered by Amy Coney Barrett yesterday. And so severability is about a provision in a law that states that if some, let's say you've got a complicated statute and some of it is held to be unconstitutional, well, do you just kind of take a scalpel and slice that part out and fix that? Or does the whole law have to be thrown out, sort of baby with the bathwater? That's what severability is. And Judge Barrett's going to offer us a little 101 on that here in just a second. 866-660-5759. We are in Garland on the phone this morning. Ron, welcome. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing just fine. Love your show.
Thank you. Love you back.
Yes, sir. My question is, I had with Rhonda is I haven't heard anybody on the radio discuss this or bring it to light within 21 days to go before the election. Mm-hmm. Is I've never voted. My wife's never voted, and our adult son has never voted.
Wow.
So what is going to be the process of going in there and actually making our selections other than Trump?
Are you registered?
Yes.
Okay. Great.
We all got a registration.
Good. That was going to be a tough conversation. It's like, oh, wah, wah, wah. Sorry. But if indeed you are, you will go to a polling place. Or, let me give you two quick snapshots. Ordinarily, If you chose to early vote, you'd go in. The crowds would be a little less. If you went on actual election day, the lines might be pretty long. Lines might be long for early voting. It's a popular thing these days. And you would stand at your local polling place, and the line would move, and the line would move, and the line would move. And you get up to the point where you get into a room, and this can vary from place to place. You get to the room, and let's say there are 20 voting machines in there, and that's why the lines move in pretty briskly. The election, the poll workers will point you to an open machine after looking at your ID. That's right, your ID. You have to prove you're you, checking you against the voter roll data that they have, your name, your address, et cetera, et cetera. They give you a little piece of paper. You'll go over there, and in, let's say, the touchscreen method or the mechanical method, you'll page through the various selections. In the old days, meaning up till now, you had the opportunity to go in and do straight ticket. I'm a Republican. Boom. One button, you're done. I don't know what I think about not having that anymore. The track record is that Democrats do it way more than Republicans do. That while Democrats will go in, they'll go, Democrat, straight ticket, goodbye. The Republicans will stand there and wring their hands and ignore lower down ballot races and go, oh, I don't know if I met that constable candidate at a bacon breakfast. Like, oh, you're killing me. And that's how Democrats won Dallas County in 2006. So there's no more of that. So it'll take a little bit longer. You'll have to actually go down the ballot, down the ballot, down the ballot, down the ballot, and vote for everybody you want to vote for.
That is important.
It's extremely important because it's about more than Trump and more than Cornyn. And just keep in mind, if conservatism is your guide, the Republican you don't know is better than any Democrat. The Republican you don't know, aren't familiar with, I haven't seen an ad for him, don't care. Vote for him anyway. If conservatism is your guide, because the failure to do that helps Democrats win, which is antithetical to conservatism. So
at the end of the process, mm-hmm. you get a printout to verify that your selections are correct.
It gives you a chance to review what you've done. You take a look and you say, okay, here's what you've done. You page back through it, and then if everything is as you wish, you hit a little thing that goes, and then your vote is then tallied. If your question is, do you get kind of a printout of here's what you did? No.
Well, because I've heard that sometimes you hit that button and then all of a sudden it, instead of say voting for Trump, it pops up Hillary or whoever.
Those tend to be anecdotal, but if something doesn't mean they don't happen, it means anecdotal.
Yeah.
And so if there's anything weird or haywire where it shows you that you cast a vote that you didn't, then you very, very gently raise your hand and go, excuse me, I think I got a problem over here. The likelihood of that is extremely low. So just get in there, enjoy it. I'm enormously proud that you're doing it. And then after you're done, you're just going to have this wonderful feeling of civic mindedness, and you're going to be so the poll workers, the people who are there engaging in their civic responsibility, are so committed and so wonderful. They're all heroes to me. Do me a favor. Why, are you planning on this today?
We're going to do it. I don't know exactly when.
whenever it is, just give me a buzz back. Let me know how it went. Now, let me ask you something, if I may, because I think you have a lot of company. You've been on the planet a little while, I'm guessing. What?
Yes, I'm 68. My wife's 63.
How in the world, through Reagan, through Carter, through both Bushes, and I know the answer is just never really occurred to me. What is it that sort of kept you from voting?
Well, honestly, it's being in Texas. I never thought that there was really the need for it, but this time around, I think it is. We're all desperately in need. We need every mm-hmm. single vote that we can muster. I mean, that's what my wife, I mean, she's adamant. She says, yeah, we've got to vote.
And good for her.
Of course, we got our adult mm-hmm. son registered, and we told him he's going to go vote.
yes, you are, boy. Well, that I am glad I asked, and thank you, and God bless you, and got to give me the report. Got to be our special first-time voter correspondent. Let me know how it goes. I am so glad I asked, because, by the way, that is the reason. Find me 100 people who historically really just don't vote or don't vote very much. Know what the answer is? They're pretty okay with the way things turn out. Or there's cynicism that says, it doesn't matter, both sides suck, which is an enormously underinformed way to be. But if you're in Texas, and for the last quarter century enjoying our relative one-party rule, and that you've been okay with that, you figured, they don't need me, it's going to work out okay anyway. Okay. Well, guess what? Now we need you. Now we need you. All righty, we are in Greenville. Joseph, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
I'm great, Mark. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I actually want to defend the governor a little bit. I think that the draconian measures that people are implementing are just asinine. And, you know, to use their monikers, this is not guided by science.
Right.
But to leave decisions, as many decisions as possible, to the lowest level of government as possible, is the Republican thing to do.
No, it's not.
And
that's factually false. That is simply factually false.
Oh, Mark.
It just is. So you're telling me that leaving this decision to liberal Clay Jenkins is the Republican conservative thing to do, rather than having a governor stand up for basic freedom for businesses? Nope.
So here's what I'm saying.
Right.
Is leaving decisions to the lowest level of government is a good thing, and people get the government they deserve. They voted for the people that are in their local government, and if their local government is a bunch of idiots,
right,
then they deserve to be governed by a bunch of idiots.
So for spite and for revenge, so we can go nanny nanny boo boo to Dallas County, Harris County, Bexar County, we're going to tell a governor it's okay to deny basic rights or to leave it open to radical liberals like Clay Jenkins, while these bar owners die on the vine and while they suffer and fire people and can't make rent and can't feed their kids. That's okay, so that we can say Clay Jenkins is an idiot. Really?
This is not spite. Don't mischaracterize me. But this is the extension of natural consequences, and it is not appropriate to interfere with people's own natural consequences.
It is completely appropriate for a governor to stand up for the basic rights of businesses in his state. Completely appropriate.
I disagree with you.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Thanks. We'll talk to the governor at 8:35. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 821. Here's a little history. Kind of a familiar instrumental, huh? From about 60 years ago. It's The Shadows with Cliff Richard. You remember Devil Woman and We Don't Talk Anymore? Those were sort of his 70s hits. But Cliff Richard was a big deal in the UK before the Beatles. In fact, listening to old Shadows records inspired George Harrison and John Lennon. Cliff Richard, still alive and 80 today. Already 866-660-5759. We're in Arlington. Steve, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mark. Good morning, sir. I'm afraid we've got a division in the conservative ranks. And it's between you and a couple of callers, and I'm one of them. You either believe in local government or you don't. If your school board controls your school or the state controls your school, then if your choice is I prefer my school board to control my school, then you default.
That is a school board. This fetish, of local control makes no sense. It is always true that the government closest to you is going to be the most responsive to what the local mood is, but that in no way means that it's always right. I'm not driven by some weird obsession with local control. No. I'm going to be finished. Exactly. They're not. That means if a governor wants to, that means that if
but
a governor
wants to tell them to do it different because they were the locally elected.
Of course
people,
he does. Of course he does. This is insane. The states were here first. No, we cannot both talk at the same time. We cannot both talk at the same time. Listen for 30 seconds. I'll give the ball back. The states were here first. The states created the federal government. In the federal system, the states sit atop the chain of political command. Can a governor tell a county to open the bars? Yes. Should he have done so? Yes. Your turn.
The local officials that the locals elect, if all officials are given the grant of authority in this situation, which I'm not sure either one of us completely agrees with, that we've got a whole lot of people stretching their authority beyond its limits. But if we're going to allow the potential that they get to control their municipality, then your mayor gets to control your city above and beyond what the governor guides.
That's just false.
It's a guideline.
That's just false. In determining these conflicts between what a governor might want to do and what your local county judge might want to do, don't get all caught up in who's closest to your house. It doesn't matter. The rule of law is what matters. If there is a difference, if there
school boards
are different. School boards are set up as little fiefdoms that are designed to have a kind of a lordship over local school issues. I'm talking about state government and local government. State government and local government. When they differ, they side with the people who side with liberty. Side with the people who side with the rule of law. Don't let geography hang you up.
Unfortunately, that's not the way it's set.
That is exactly the way it works. That is exactly the way it should work. All right, well, I tell you who we ought to ask about this. The governor himself. He's next. Mark Davis, 830. All right. Speaking of doing something for conservatism and all those Patriot Mobile ads, I always say, hey, even when the election's not happening, there's stuff you can do for conservatism. Well, guess what? The election is happening. It is underway. This is the second day of early voting. Here we are. Governor Greg Abbott is with us to talk about that and who knows what else. Governor, welcome back, sir. How you doing?
I'm fired up about these elections and about getting Republicans to the polls to make sure that we keep Texas red.
Now, you and I were just talking about these through-the-roof early voting numbers. I sense that some people want me to believe, want us to believe, that surely must be Texas Democrats rising up to make it at least a close race or to take back the Texas House. But all we know from sky-high early voting numbers, we don't know who those people are yet.
And that's the deal. And that is, we're happy that people are turning out to vote, but we need to make sure that it's going to be the people who will turn out to vote who do keep Texas red. And so the Democrats are claiming success. The Republicans are claiming success. I think taking this for granted by anybody is a huge mistake. All I know is that we need to double down and make sure people go out. I'll give you a real inside tidbit. We get to see what the data looks like after every day of voting. And one thing that we saw from early voting in Tarrant County were the numbers that I was looking at, and that is there were between 3% and 7% of the people that voted had never voted before in some of these Texas House of Representative races. And as a result, we need to engage from now all the way to Election Day on November the 3rd to make sure that people do go out and vote. There is so much at stake. And Mark, I do have to add this because we need to talk about this and maybe at length, but I know there are a lot of people so excited about the presidential race, and it's the presidential race that's motivating so many people. That said, this is the first time that we have not had straight ticket voting. When people go vote, if they just vote for president and go home, it could be catastrophic for the future of the state of Texas. We have so many close Texas House of Representative races in your listening area, in Dallas County, in Collin County, in Tarrant County, and the list goes on. And people have to take the time and vote all the way down the ballot. And it gets maybe even more weighty when it comes to judges.
Of course.
Mark, as you know, and some of your listeners know, there are some people elected to be judges in Dallas County who are self-categorized as Democrat socialists. These are people who don't believe in the rule of law. They don't follow the Constitution. They are catastrophic judges. And so please, when you go vote, do not stop at the president. Go all the way down the ballot. It'll take you a few extra minutes.
It's worth it. It is worth it. What was the logic? Because you're totally right, and I'm lecturing people about that all day long. What exactly was the logic in getting rid of straight ticket voting?
Listen, there were so many different things to it. I will tell you that most states do not have straight ticket voting. What we saw last time in the state of Texas was that there were these people, I know for a fact in Harris County, some in Dallas County also, of judges running as Democrats. So it's just that there's not a single person that you would be able to talk to, Mark, who would be able to identify any of these social Democrat judges or Democrat socialist judges who got elected, and they just got elected on the coattails of somebody who went in and pulled a straight Labor ticket. We want to make sure that people are knowing who these candidates are and will be voting for these candidates for whatever reason. It could be because of party identification, or it could be because of they know the person, or they know the person who's the incumbent judge who want to vote against, whatever the case may be.
Gotcha.
But it does impose greater requirements in the voting system to make sure that we will be putting good judges in place and eliminate the bad judges.
So the methodology of voting, early voting underway, real elections November 3rd, huge amount of focus. And please give me a little bit of history, because I think that's going to make your case, and I wanted you to make it on this one ballot drop-off box per county. Everybody's taking to the streets. Oh, voter intimidation. What is the history of these drop-off locations? What are the drop-off locations, and why is only one per county okay?
If you don't mind, let me start with the end and then come back and tell you the full story. The end is the Federal Court of Appeals considered it all and said that what I did was perfectly legal and was zero voter intimidation. And actually, it was an expansion of the ability of people to vote. Now, to your question, the history of it is before COVID, before the pandemic, before we had concerns about people gathering together in voting, if you get a mail-in ballot, most people, Mark, you may find this strange, but most people cast a mail-in ballot by the mail.
And they, that's kind of the point.
and they don't physically show up to cast their ballot. But if they do want to drop off their ballot, did you know, Mark, around Dallas County, and around Tarrant County, there probably are maybe 100 or so drop-off points already, and they're called mailboxes that you can drop
yes.
them off.
Yes.
And so before this election, there was a single drop-off location for when you're going to drop off a mail-in ballot, remembering that there are three ways to vote. One is in person on election day. Mm-hmm. Two is in person in early voting, and three is through a mail-in ballot, which almost all mail-in ballots are actually mailed in. And here's what we did. For early voting, we extended the time period for that for a week so that people would be less crowded in these voting areas, and hence there would be less possibility for the transmission of COVID-19. For the mail-in ballots, but before this election, you had only one day if you wanted to show up in person and turn in your vote, and that was on election day, and only that one location. What I did is to give you that opportunity to use any of the early day voting days to be able to, in person, hand in your mail-in ballot, but maintaining that one single voter location site where it would be turned in. And the reason for that is to make sure that we would have poll watchers there available to make sure that there was no fraud, no misconduct, no confusion with regard to the turning in of these mail-in ballots.
Gotcha. So if somebody in a Dallas County or a Harris County said, okay, you got one, give us four, just at the corners or whatever. So, I mean, and I'm hearing you that if that mail-in ballot is a mail-in ballot, mail it in. That's kind of the point. But if for some reason people want to drive with that thing and drop it in a slot, the reason why, you know, I guess if you start with three or four or five, they'll never be happy. Why not 10? Why not 20? Why not 30? And eventually security becomes a problem.
Security does become a problem because there are multiple people handling it, but there are 20, 30, 40, or whatever in Harris County, in Dallas County, in Tarrant County, and they're called mailboxes where people can turn in a mail-in
that's
ballot.
If that's the slot you want, that's the slot you want. Governor Greg Abbott with us here on what I've now learned has become the local bar owners talk show. Oh, my heavens. So a couple of days ago, you put up that tweet, hey, great news coming, little beer glasses in the tweet, and the bar owners went, yay, and then we opened up the bars, but whoa, you left veto power in the hands of Daddy Clay Jenkins. So as you look at the map of Texas, all kinds of bars open. No Dallas, no Houston, no San Antonio, no Austin. Why in the world leave that veto power in the hands of authoritarian county judges?
Well, so first we need to work on some nomenclature here. If it's good, Mark. His name is Closed Down Clay.
Yes, well, hence my point.
But there was a very good reason why we did it this way, and it really relates to some other counties. And this was based upon conversations that we had with leaders of what was going on in some other locations. First, we did want to open up bars as much as possible in as many locations as possible. We knew at the time when we opened them up, what was going on in El Paso, Texas. El Paso, Texas was not yet at that time, and they are still not yet into the red zone with regard to the number of hospitalizations that would require them to shut back down. But there was a multi-day massive spike in the number of COVID cases out there. The same thing is and was going on in Lubbock, Texas, and I can't remember what decision they made. Mm-hmm. But there are certain counties in the state of Texas where there are spikes going on with regard to the spread of COVID, and we wanted to give the judges in those regions the flexibility that they may need to be able to contain it. There are, however, as you are pointing out, a couple of counties. You know, Tarrant County opened up their bars. Every county surrounding Dallas County,
yeah.
So Dallas County as a whole in the donut, and every county around Dallas has their bars open, and people are going to be able to go to those bars. But and if these other counties, like Harris County, for example, has extremely low cases, and that they've been at the 5% or so positivity rate for weeks now, and they're in good shape. And if they continue to keep things shut down, I may have to go in and override them.
Well, but you see, but here's the thing, and here's what I heard from them, because I see the logic, in a sense. And we've just had a fascinating civics back and forth about local control, that if this allows Close Down Clay to close down as is his want, why not open the bars, say, listen, I'm going to allow bars to open. And then if I'm hearing you correctly, in areas where there are spikes, you felt like you would be thwarting perhaps a sensible decision in an El Paso or a Lubbock, where they might say, hey, we got spikes over here, leave it up to us. And this is the sort of the cost of leaving it up to them, is you'll get the occasional Daddy Clay.
Yeah. And so we have a good metric in place so that we're no longer making decisions on a statewide basis about whether or not a certain region has the ability to be open or they need to ratchet back. And it's through this process of looking at these 22 different hospital regions in the state of Texas, which is a far better way than having whatever may be going on in El Paso affect what is going on in Beaumont, where they did open up bars.
That's the thing. But that's what's making people crazy. So what was the key? You mentioned a fascinating word about 2 minutes ago, and that verb was override. How might that happen?
The way that would happen is if there are certain counties where the numbers continue to go down and the safety continues to go up, but these county judges continue to keep businesses closed down, that could lead to an override. But it's premature to make that because the opening of bars, of course, is just now going into effect.
I know. We've just started doing it. So moving forward, what might be the criteria that you would examine to see if maybe, just maybe, you would step in and override the Dallas County judge's shutdown order? What would the factors be?
The same criteria that existed. So as you probably have observed and your audience probably has observed, we make these decisions about every 2 to 3 weeks. We need kind of 2 full weeks of information to see what is happening in the aftermath of our last decision. So I made a decision earlier in September about opening up and expanding all different kinds of businesses. And then we saw that we were able to do that without having an increase in COVID cases. And that's when we went to almost all businesses in the state of Texas are either 100% or 75%, with bars at 50%. And now we will be able to look at these openings for a couple of weeks, which is what we typically need. Because it takes a while for a spread to occur in the aftermath of an opening. And if we have a couple of weeks of time period where we can see that the openings of these operations have not led to a spread, and that would lead to additional openings, and that would be perhaps a mandate in all counties that bars would be open, and perhaps they would be able to open now at more than a 50% rate. So the goal, every announcement is not an end unto itself. It's not the final verdict. We are looking to open up all businesses even more. Our goal, Mark, as you might imagine, is to get to 100% of all businesses open 100%. Right now we have most businesses open 75% or 100% with bars at 50%. We'll be getting to 100% on all businesses pretty soon.
It is Governor Greg Abbott. Last thing, this is directly from a listener email who wants to know, since you and I last spoke, you set the runoff for Shelley Luther and Drew Springer for December 19th. If she wins, will you guys be able to get along?
Listen, I'm going to be working with anybody on the Republican side who gets elected. Our goal is to make sure we return Republicans to the Capitol, because it is essential with so many close issues. And Mark, I got to emphasize these House races that we didn't talk about.
Yep.
Because we have to have reforms that we shut down these cities that are defunding police. We got to fund our police. We got to be able to make sure we have enough Republicans that will be able to override things like the Denton fracking ban and crazy local ordinances like that. We got to make sure that we continue to cut taxes, et cetera. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is to make sure that we're going to have Republican majorities in both the Texas House and the Texas Senate.
Governor Abbott on Twitter, at Gov Abbott. Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you. Look forward to talking to you again soon. And, boy, let's do another Get Out the Vote rally or whatever right here on the show or anywhere, and we'll talk to you soon. I know. I appreciate it.
Let's do it. Thank you, Mark. Take care. Go vote.
Go vote. God bless. Governor Greg Abbott back in a moment, 8:52. Some late-era Moody Blues. I'm more of a Knights in White Satin Tuesday afternoon kind of guy. But Justin Hayward, John Lodge, and the boys carrying that legacy into the 80s. Justin Hayward, 74 today. So here are the answers for your consideration. I had two questions that I had. Why leave a bar opening in the hands of authoritarian county judges like Clay Jenkins? And his answer was that in a couple of counties, in El Paso and Lubbock, if he just issued a blanket, hey, open the bars, they got some spikes out there, and he didn't want to open the bars against, I don't want to say against the science, against what might have been in the best interest of those communities. County judges up there might have wanted to say, can we sit tight a minute? And maybe, unlike Dallas County, they'd have a reason to do so. Okay. Most valuable part of that chapter of the conversation is Governor Abbott told us, making a little news here, that he's going to keep an eye on things in Dallas County. And if cases remain low, controllable, not the kind of thing that warrant a shutdown, he could override Daddy Clay. We'll look for that if the data support it. And the second question is about these one ballot drop-off things. Oh, it's voter suppression. Who takes a mail-in ballot and drives it somewhere anyway? Who does that? The answer is some people. Great. You want to do that? Go where the drop-off box is and do it. Otherwise, as the governor said, there are hundreds of drop-off locations within a mile of your house. They're called mailboxes. So how did those answers strike you? I'll share my thoughts and you share yours, and we'll listen in and get some audio from the Amy Coney Barrett hearings as an adventure on a Wednesday continues. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.